Hello and welcome to Talk Hockey Radio. We're doing a little bit of a special one today, just covering pretty much one topic to finish off the year. And hopefully we'll be back in January again. But as always, I have Fraser and Simon with me to talk and maybe rant as well. Maybe, I don't know. We'll see how it goes. Hi, Fraser.
Hi, Taff. Thought you were going to burst into song then. Very musical introduction.
It's not like Christmas yet. It doesn't feel like Christmas here. Hi, Simon.
What's up?
Oh, he's feeling in one of those moods today. You can tell, can't you? Okay, so, Si, as usual, we're going to let you sort of like introduce what we're going to talk about today, and then we'll go right into it, and maybe you can start us off as well.
Sure. So we're going to cover the FIH Star Awards, which I think for third or fourth year in a row have been a little bit of a joke. There was some optimism, I think, when some of the shortlists were announced. And whilst none of them were 100% sensible, they were a lot more sensible than they had been in recent years. So that was kind of a nice change. And then the winners got announced, and there's been a fairly predictable response on social media. So yeah, should we go through who has won what? Any odd category by category?
Yeah, definitely. Do you want to start off with the less ranty ones and then get into, you know, like a volcano, kind of like that? So,
yeah, the payoff at the end for Simon's run.
My personal point of view would be most of the people who've won at least deserve to be shortlisted. Not all of them, but most of them.
Yeah.
So I'm not necessarily going to criticise category by category as to who did or didn't win. However, surveying the list, I think I agreed with one and could see, whilst I might not agree with it, that there's merit in it for five of them out of 10, I think. So, yeah. Well, we'll start off with the women's one. This one went to Xander Vard, who arguably probably could have won it last year as well. What are your thoughts on Xander Vard winning it?
Well, like you said, she could have won it last year, right? And we had pretty strong women in there, right? If you got to agree, right? Is she the strongest? Is she the woman of the year or whatever? Debatable, I think. But with the categories last year, do we think she should have won it last year?
I think she should have won it last year.
Okay, right. So we've got different players, obviously, within this category now. Okay, should she have won it this year? I'm guessing you guys think no, or maybe you don't. But is this the one? This could be one of the ones that you think, yeah, okay, maybe there is a bit of a reason for her winning. Has she done better than other players this year?
To me, yeah, I think she's a worthy winner and worthy person to have been nominated for it. Last year it went to Felice Albers. I think Xander Vard was shortlisted, and I would have given it to her last year as well. She just doesn't ever seem to make a mistake. She's done very well at club level, which is where I think you really see the difference that she can make, because for her club, she isn't completely surrounded by people who would probably walk into any other national team. Obviously, in the Dutch team, it's harder to shine because you are surrounded by pretty much the best person in every position available. Not always, but pretty much. So it is maybe harder to shine, but she's also been captain. So I think it's who I would have voted for, and in fact did vote for, and I think that it's a fair enough one. I can see where people are coming from when she's won it.
Yeah, like Sam touched on, I think she's had a phenomenal year. I think she had a great year last year, and you could definitely make the case that she should have won last year as well. I think this year, as we discussed, you know, a few weeks ago when we were talking about the nominations, she's a really strong nomination. We all kind of were leaning towards she seemed to be the obvious choice. So wholly unexpected that she actually won. Who would have thought we'd be right about something?
Just check, she wasn't shortlisted last year. It was Felice Albers, Maria Jose Granato, Agustina Gozzolani, Federica Matta, and Georgina Oliva.
Oh, okay, right. So she should have actually been shortlisted last year, but she wasn't. But she was shortlisted this year and she won. So, you know, maybe they rectified that from last year. But again, you know, they're not very forthcoming on how they come to the conclusion of these you know, shortlists and stuff like that, really, are they? I don't think they are.
They watch the Pro League. They sometimes watch World Cups. and then they throw darts at a dartboard for numbers.
Pretty much, yeah, maybe. Pretty much. Well, look, people have left FIA, so let's see what happens anyway. Go on then, next one.
Next one. The men's award was won by Hardik Singh.
Oh, shocker. Sorry, go on. Carry on.
So, I mean, when you look at the other candidates, it's an interesting decision. I'm not saying by any stretch that he didn't deserve to be shortlisted. However, I think I've even seen Indian commentators saying that this is a ridiculous decision.
Really?
And again, but it has called into question the credibility of the award. Some people take the line of they have to have won stuff, and I've seen Indian commentators discounting the Asian Cup because it's such a weak competition. They did very badly in Pro League. There haven't been many other competitions for them to be assessed in, I suppose. But when you've got someone like Thierry Brinkman, who's won the Euros, who did so well in Pro League, did so well at club, and then as a player, I think is internationally known as being one of the best. And you have Nicolas Bellin, who was phenomenal at the World Cup, and again has done well for club. Maybe not so well at the Euros, but that was the whole team. It just seems same old outcome.
So I've seen a lot of discourse online saying Hardik deserved the nomination because he was the best player in the Indian team in the World Cup, where they massively underperformed. But I would counter to say, I don't think he had a very good Pro League. And I know the FIA only looks at those top international competitions. They don't care about Euros, Asian Games, Pan Ams, anything like that, only those top tournaments. And I don't think you could say that he had a good performance in the Pro League. Yeah, he was the strongest player in the World Cup, but that was when the Indian men's team was massively underperforming. So I would argue that I don't think he deserved the nomination, even if you say that they wanted to put an Indian player into the category. I don't think he's the one who should have deserved it. All of the points that they make about him being a strong midfielder, him carrying the team, all transfer onto other players within the Indian team, let alone outside of that, far better. Everything that they say to describe his performance in the World Cup for India transfers to Velen for Germany in the World Cup, who won the World Cup. So it just brings into question the whole award. And once again, it's another person who's won the Men's Player of the Year, who we have to put an asterisk next to their name and say controversially, which I think is just awful for the player.
Yeah.
Imagine being told you're the best player in the world and everyone goes, well, this award's a joke.
Yeah, and even Indians as well, right? Okay, even like you were saying, Si, even Indians have basically turned around and said, we don't think so. Well, you know, not, what can I say? Not the true, I'm going to say something bad here. We'll probably get some backlash. True hockey supporters, right? Not just Indian supporters. Like, you know, true hockey supporters are questioning that, really, to be fair, right? Yeah. And that goes from whichever country you're in, true hockey supporters, right, that want our support to succeed are going, you know, what? Okay.
Anyway. It comes down to the way that the vote's done. So when you break it down, 20% of a vote from the total vote, so basically half of the expert panel voted for Nicolas Bellin. Then 8% for Zach Wallace and 8% for Hardik Singh and 4% for Thierry Brinkman.
Yeah.
But it's where the media and fans came in that he massively caught up and won. And it's because it's done on the volume of votes. So if you have 5,000 people in the press voting, 4,000 of them are Indian press voting for Indian players, then it's going to skew it. Whereas, yeah, you know, I took a media vote and you know, it'd be nice to see Zach Wallace win it, but I don't think he's the best player in the men's. If there'd been a Scottish player listed, I wouldn't vote for them just because they're Scottish. I vote for whoever's the best on a novel idea that maybe they should get it for being the best, not because they happen to be the same nationality as me.
Yeah. I totally agree. Get that one.
And maybe those people voting genuinely think he's the best.
Yeah. But can I maybe interject there a little bit? Is it because let's say the Indian supporters only get to watch Indian hockey a lot more than they get to watch European or you know, Pan Ams or things like that. Is that the case? And what they see is Indian-centric hockey all the time, right? So all they get to see is their players doing the Asian Cup or whatever, and if they're in a competition, that's what they get to see, right? And they kind of like get to see other teams when and if, yeah. And it's pretty much similar to us here in this country, right? But we as journalists, we look at, very loosely termed there. We as journalists or podcasters or whatever, you know, hockey badges or whatever, right, are looking at other competitions as well, right? We're looking at the Pan Ams, we're looking at the Junior World Cups, we're looking at the Europeans, we're looking at the Asian Cups and things like that, and we get to see a whole variety of hockey, right? Whereas some of these supporters probably don't.
Yeah.
Should we go on to the next one?
Yeah, so next one is the women's goalkeeper, which went to Zavita. And again, there's been a similar reaction, including again from people from Indian media criticizing actually her inclusion on the shortlist, let alone her winning it. So for disclosure's sake, I voted for Kelsey being on this one. I think it's an interesting thing that you just raised there about people seeing things and also the size of the fans. So the USA fans are pretty tiny compared to a lot of the other countries listed here. So you've got an Australian, you've got a Dutch, an Indian, and a German, who probably have a more active fan base. Reason I went with Kelsey Bing is every time I've seen her, either in person or on TV, she has been phenomenal and saved the Americans from what was potentially an extremely embarrassing scoreline. I think there's a really strong argument for Jostein Koenig to be the best because of what she'd done at club and country level. Interestingly, Julia Sontag had the strongest vote from the expert panel, but on the other hand, I believe the expert panel had one goalkeeper on it, which is Simon Mason. So obviously all the others could be goalkeeper coaches, and I didn't know that. I doubt it. And whilst their opinion is definitely valid, when you're doing specific awards on this sort of, to me, the goalkeepers should be in the same with the players personally. I think it reduces the value and sees it makes it a secondary tier award. Whereas people like Maddie Hinch, Ollie Payne, Vincent Van Ash, all these guys should be in the mix to be considered the best player in the world. Just because they wear a bunch of pads, to me, it's wrong to signal them out as a secondary thing. Obviously, there's a counter argument. It's a specialist skill set, so therefore it warrants its own category. I can see the argument for that as well. But if it's going to be a specialist one, you need specialists to vote. Instead, we had FIH umpires, we had people who are coaches, we had at various different levels, we had administrators. It just isn't an expert panel for goalkeeping.
So with the topic of including goalkeepers in Player of the Year, I think the only problem with that is it would be very rare that you would get someone nominated. Like, you've mentioned Maddie Hinch, absolutely she could have been thrown in, but can you name me two other goalkeepers who you think should have won Player of the Year? And that's just going to lead to them being left out. So creating a specialist category for them, I think, is a better option to make sure that goalkeepers are reflected on. Likewise, I also think there should be Defensive Player of the Year, because again, it's one of those positions where they might not do the glory, might not get the glory of being seen to do these groundbreaking things like the now defunct Most Exciting Player Award used to be, kind of the attacking focus side. And I think there should have also been, and still should be, Defensive Player of the Year as well.
So do we go with midfielder and forwards as well? So we just basically cover everything, and then we maybe select one player.
Maybe we're going too granular, because we might end up doing the famed Anna Toman Award for being Anna Toman going to Flora Peel.
Yeah.
So I would have goalkeeper, defensive player, and exciting player as the three. I wouldn't say best midfielder. I wouldn't say best forward. Most exciting player is probably going to be an attacking player. It's going to be someone who's creating chances. It's going to be someone who's doing something attacking-wise. No one gets excited watching players man mark for 60 minutes at international level. But it's that kind of behind-the-scenes work that you could put Defensive Player of the Year. You talk about Brendan Creed's save that kept England in the game. Is that going to win an award?
Yeah, probably. Wouldn't it?
Is it?
I don't know. But, I mean, a lot of people do similar things, don't they? A lot of defensive players do a lot of similar things. I've seen some really, amazing saves just off the line as well by defending players.
But is that going to win an award? Do people remember saves like that compared to scoring a game-winning goal?
Probably not. Probably not. Shall we move on?
Sure. So the next one is the men's goalkeeper, which went to Pearman Black. And he was joined on the shortlist by Andrew Charter of Australia, Jean-Paul Danneberg of Germany, Ollie Payne of England, and Vincent Van Asch of Belgium.
So we discussed this, I mean, obviously last podcast, and we kind of like all agreed on one person, right? I'm pretty sure. So Black basically winning. Were we expecting that? I don't think we were, really. Were we? Because we was like, were we expecting him to win? I don't think so, because we all went for Ollie, didn't we, really? Right.
He beat Van Asch by 0.6 of a percent.
Okay, right. I think it would have been between Van Asch and Ollie Payne, to be fair, right? But Black winning it is it deserved? Is, you know, he's obviously one of the better keepers in the world anyway, right? Because he's obviously been shortlisted and stuff. But that doesn't necessarily mean anything, to be fair.
I think the list is an interesting one. I actually would have had Trudeau on the list as well. I think he's an incredible goalkeeper.
Yeah, I think you said that last time, didn't you?
Yeah. I really, really rate him. And maybe it's harder for him because they've been rotating the Indian goalkeeper so much. But on the other hand, I'm pretty sure that's what they've been doing with Dutch. They've had Visser and Pearman Black on rotation. Pearman Black won it by 0.6 of a percent over Vincent Van Asch. And then Jean-Paul Danneberg was third, which was off of the fans, media, and national associations vote. Ollie Payne was fourth, and then Andrew Charter was fifth.
This sounds like the Eurovision, doesn't it, really? We've got one of the better goalkeepers at the bottom end of the scale there.
I think something might have gone against Ollie Payne might have been the fact that we didn't actually finish so high in the World Cup. When you look at his statistical performance per match, it's very hard to argue that he's not the best, because the goals conceded per game versus the shots faced, etc., are completely in his favour.
I
really like Vincent Van Asch, but I think a little bit of that may be his reputation, and the fact he's a very nice guy and devilishly handsome.
Fraser, what do you think about Black winning?
I mean, I don't think I would ever say undeserved, because I think he is definitely one of the best goalkeepers in the world. Like we talked last time, I thought Payne has had the best year of any goalkeeper at the international level. As Simon says, when you go on the FIH stats, he's clearly out in front. So I don't know if it's just not campaigning enough by England Hockey to get the fan base voting, or if it's just lack of kind of presence overseas. It's hard to put your finger on kind of what could cause it, but
yeah, okay. Well, I mean, look, obviously it's deserving that he's won anyway. And you know, although we might not agree with it, it's great, isn't it? At the end of the day, next one
is the Women's Coach of the Year. So as I understand that, that is a coach who is a woman rather than the person who coaches the women's teams, if that makes sense. Which, as far as I can recall off the top of my head, basically means if you're looking right at the top of the world, there's two candidates, which I think is Jannica Schottmann and Alison Annan. And basically, the description implies that because they won the Asian Games, Alison Annan won it. I think they're both really good coaches. I was disappointed that Alison Annan didn't end up with the GB setup, and that she went to China.
Weren't we all?
Imagine the Chinese weren't that gutted.
I doubt that very much.
Yeah, I mean, you know, she's done some really good stuff. I remember seeing them play at Pro League and said to her, like, the way that they're playing, they have personality and flair and charisma on the pitch, which they've not really had for a long time. And I think she deserves a lot of credit for that. So I don't really have much to say on that one.
I think, you know, We discussed this when she went to China, right? And the dynamics of the team have actually changed a lot, haven't they? Right? And you can see from their social media as well, right? If you look at this out of social media and, you know, the little not TikTok clips, reels or whatever they call them. Okay, the reels that
Sit down with the kids.
Yeah, I know, right?
You're on Bebo, aren't you?
The reels that they're actually posting are showing like the team really having a good time, you know, doing some training sessions, doing little warm-ups and things like that. And if you go back to before Anand got there, there's not much of it. There's not much of that camaraderie and, you know, joyous, you know, I'm happy to be here kind of thing. But I think, you know, quite well deserved. I mean, out of the coaches on the list, do you think that she should have won it anyway? Personally, yes, I do, because I think she's an amazing coach.
Yeah,
she's consistently good.
Because I mean, like I said, the list, when you look at right at the top, I can only think of two. I know obviously Kate Richardson Walsh is involved with Canada. I believe the American coach is also a woman. They got relegated from Pro League. So I mean, they got kept up because of a bizarre system VFH uses. I think it's fair enough.
Fraser?
Yeah, like Sam says, when you look at the female coaches at the highest level, there's not really a lot of options, and of the options available, she is a clear favourite.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's a bit she of doubt. Sorry, go on.
I was going to say, she has massively improved the Chinese national team, both in performance and style of play. And I think that has to be taken into account, not just that they're becoming more successful, but also they're playing better hockey.
Yeah, I think that, well, you know, they needed that, didn't they, really? They need a coach like Anand to come in and sort of like really shake it up. I think overall, you know, what she's done with the Dutch team and then moving on to China and doing what she's doing there now and making them a little bit more successful, a little bit more, you know, can I say happier? Looking like they're happier to be there and stuff like that. I've always liked her anyway, so you know, I think you guys have as well, obviously. So I think that's definitely deserving, and I agree with that for sure. Not that it matters anyway, but you know. Next one
is the men's coach, which went to Andre Henning of Germany. So in the commentary provided, it's basically because the Germans won the World Cup, which I think a lot of people could see coming. I think some people argued for Jeroen Hertzberg. Not Hertzberg, he's not a coach. Jeroen Delmey from the Netherlands because they won the Euros. And some people argued for Paul Revington, who's coaching England and Great Britain men, because they've improved so much. So if it was me, I'd have gone with Revington. I think that the progress of the England and GB squad has just been phenomenal. They're a very entertaining team. They're consistently fighting for medals. They haven't won anything, which is the one thing that counts against them, I think. But then on the other hand, England and GB very rarely win anything on the men's side of competition. So getting to where they are, I think, is a reflection of good coaching, and hopefully they can go beyond that. I think Germany at the World Cup, you know, they pulled it out of the bag. They were losing regularly until the last few minutes and managed to pull it out. Don't think they had a good Euros. I think, obviously, it's hard to look past winning a World Cup.
Yeah, I think, as you touched on there, the consistent improvement of the GB men's team, I would warrant, is better than a one-off success, because when he came into the coaching role, what were they, fifth or sixth ranked in the world? And they've climbed up to, I think, they're third at the minute, which, although it doesn't sound like a huge movement, in terms of breaking into the top three in the world, it's a huge achievement. And like I say, I don't know if you can justify the award off one success when for the rest of the year they've not really performed.
Yeah, I can see why I got it, and I could definitely see the argument against him getting it.
Well, like you said, you know, the FA actually look at a select few competitions, and you know, one of them was where they actually did really well anyway.
Some would argue winning the World Cup is a fairly substantial reward.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know, it was leading up to that, and like you're saying as well, Fraser, that they've moved up from, you know, sixth to third or whatever, or however many places they've moved up. They've moved up a lot under the Henning. So a deserving one, I suppose. But you know, we could argue that other people should have won it as well. Do we go? The problem is with coaches. Do you go off the success that you had, or in terms of winning bigger competitions, or do we go off how great you've actually progressed and how much you've improved?
I would say you have to go off expectation versus outcome, because I know, okay, in the past, Arsene Anand has won it being the Dutch coach, but she was coaching the best team in the world, so it was expected she was going to win. She's now gone away to the Chinese team, and they are consistently outperforming what their expectation is based on their world ranking. And likewise with Revington, England GB men's have been outperforming what their world ranking expectation would dictate, finishing second in Pro League, finishing second at the Euros, having a great showing at the World Cup, even though they didn't get that far. Yeah, so I think you've got to factor that in when talking about the quality of a coach.
Yeah, definitely. Next one?
Next one is the women's umpire, which went to Ayanna McLean.
Do you want to lead on that one? You're the umpire expert, so let's go with it.
I think, you know, Ayanna's had a challenging pathway. She's obviously umpiring out of one of the lesser known or less strong regions, and yet has still consistently gained a number of FIH appointments, and she's been to World Cups and Olympics. I believe she was over here in England for a while umpiring the National League as well to advance her umpiring. So I think it's nice to see her celebrated for her contributions and her achievements. Also, with an inclusion hat on, I think it is going to be meaningful to people to see a non-white winner in this category, because I cannot think of any time that it's not been white winning either men's or women's. So I think on that front as well, you know, she's a good role model for a lot of people. And she's always very calm when you see her umpire. Nothing ever seems to faze her. So, yeah, well done to Ayanna.
Just on that note there, basically, I'm thinking, how many non-white umpires do we have? Do we have a lot?
Depends. I mean, there's obviously a number from Argentina, and from Asian countries as well. A number of them, like Cookie, for example, doing very well. So there's a lot of good umpires out there, but I cannot think of a time where this award went to someone. I think one year they actually got rid of the award outright, which I thought was an incredible decision.
Yeah. Was that just before COVID, wasn't it?
It was around that time, yeah.
Yeah. I think it was before COVID. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, and I just think, obviously, I'm slightly biased, to say the least. But I do think when you consider the importance of officials to the game, it's important. They need to be celebrated, like good umpiring, because it has such a heavy impact. And if you can celebrate good umpires, it will filter down and people will be like, okay, I want to be more like that umpire, and I'll umpire more like that. So with Ayanna, people will see her and think she's just so composed and doesn't seem to get flustered. If other umpires aspiring, you know, to do regional, national, international matches can have that level of composure, because they've seen her do it and she's been profiled and celebrated at the awards, then it will improve the game. It's as simple as that. And but also by having, you know, I've spoken to players and umpires about their lived experiences of racism in hockey, and having someone who has the same skin colour as you holding the whistle means there will be greater empathy. There will be greater understanding of some of the challenges faced, and it will just make it that little bit easier also for the players.
Fraser?
Yeah, I think, as Simon switched on, the fact that she's come from a smaller hockey community, she's not come from one of the big nations, really shows how she's progressed up through the system. And I think, if nothing else, that in its own right needs to have a light shone on it to show this pathway through and the progress that she's made. As Simon said, she always seems to be very calm and composed when she's umpiring games. She's done quite a few like big games that we've seen. So yeah, I think.
Okay. Well, who was in the category? Who were the other players?
The young players. There's no shortlist.
Yeah. Oh, so the coaches, the umpires, and the rising players weren't categories. They just went to the expert panel.
Okay. All right. Okay. Right, next one.
So men's umpire went to Ben Grotigan of Germany. So Ben got quite a lot of attention for headbutting a ball, which is always ill-advised.
Oh, yeah, I saw that one. Oh, my God. that was not good. But
He got stuck in India after a World Cup for ages, trying to recover, made his umpiring comeback, and ended up doing a European final alongside Sarah Wilson. And again, I think there's a nice story to be told here about, you know, Ben's always been right at the top of umpiring for a very long time, but his ability to come back from that and to step back on the pitch, and, you know, like a lot of umpires have been hit before, it hurts. And it's just one of those things, you can't often get out of the way sometimes, but not many of us who've been hit have had quite the same damage. Yeah. So it's a lot of bravery to have come back, to have not really missed a step on his way back, and to deliver and end up getting the appointment he got for the European final. Again, it's a good endorsement, and it shows to a lot of other umpires that you can be resilient and get through things.
To be fair, I've never tried to headbutt a ball anyway, but well, you know, I think a lot of people saw that and thought, oh wow, that's going to be like pretty bad. But players get hit all the time, and you know, they come back as well, and it's very rare that an umpire gets hit, especially like that. And like you're saying, it's scary for anyone to come back and start umpiring, playing or whatever, fearing that it could happen again. It's probably unlikely it'll ever happen again, but there's always that risk, isn't there? Yeah. Is it deserved?
Yeah, I'm sure when the ball hit him, the first thing that went through his head, Taff, was, that's me nailed on for umpire of the year.
Do you reckon he did it on purpose? No, well, you're joking. Sorry, Ben. I would like to know who the other people were in contention for this as well. But
I would imagine that others in contention would be people like Ali Keogh and Sarah Wilson and Amber Church for the women's.
Yeah.
People like Jakob. Who else? Kuhn, probably. Who's doing some really nice work on social media in particular for growing umpiring. And actually, I think Martin from Scotland also would have been in with a shout for the men's. I think he's been fantastic. Every game I've seen him, again, one of those ones who just nothing seems to fluster him, but it does help that he's a police officer. And he is about the size of a truck. So no one would actually, in their right mind, pick a fight with him.
Cool. Well, yeah. Have you got anything to add to that, Fraser, before we move on? No? All right, cool. Next one?
Next one is the Women's Rising Star. This has gone to Teresa Lima. I probably said that wrong, sorry. And this is based on her winning the Best Player of a Tournament award at the recent Women's Junior World Cup. I thought Bonamy or Demotte from Belgium would have been in contention. Dikker from the Netherlands could have been in contention. I think it was also, was it Janssen playing for the Netherlands? I think Maddie Axford for England could have been in there. There's one or two from Argentina as well. So I didn't see much of Spain play, so I cannot really comment on, because of the timing of it, I could only really watch most of the England matches, and then at the later stages, caught as much as I could. I don't think Spain made it through to the later stages.
To be honest with you, I've not seen many of the Spanish games as well, so I can't really comment. I don't know. Fraser has lots more time than us both anyway. Go on, Fraser. Did you get to watch it?
I definitely don't.
Any thoughts on that, though? I don't know.
Yeah, so I did watch some of the highlights. And
See? Go on, carry on. Sorry.
The highlights take like a minute, Taff. Don't pretend like you don't have time to watch the highlights. You just can't be bothered. I did watch some of the highlights.
He hasn't got a signal in Batra's basement.
Yeah, but he's probably got a live feed in Batra's basement. He's not arguing. He does have a live feed in Batra's basement.
I nearly choked on my tea then, but carry on.
Yeah, so having watched some of the highlights in the Spanish games, she did feature quite a lot in those highlights. But I think the fact that Spain didn't progress very far, from my point of view, kind of should rule her out. I don't think she really did enough to justify winning player of the tournament for the amount of effect she had on the results. She had a very strong showing within her team, but I think, as Simon said, there's a number of people who went much further in the tournament, but I think would have been stronger candidates.
Yeah. Okay. Next one.
The last one is the men's rising star, which again went to a player who was named as best player at the men's junior World Cup, and this was France's Gaspard Xavier. I didn't watch any of it because, again, timing was really difficult, but also they had three different competitions on at the same time, which was an odd decision from the FIH. And that could warrant its own rant, as well as how crap Watch.hockey hockey is, but it crashed constantly. Yeah, I was disappointed not to watch much of it. The most I've seen is on Keeley's decision reviews and the odd clip on social media, like that absolutely ridiculous goal that a Belgian guy scored over his head behind his back. So I cannot comment on how deserved this was. I just know France made it to the final, which, again, I read some really funny comments saying, like, there's some people saying how outrageous it is that a French player has won this. It's like, well, if he's the best player, then he's the best player, isn't he? I don't know.
Absolutely.
I mean, in fact, France made it to the final and he was captain and probably played a massive part in that nomination. Yeah, but having not watched any of it, it's very difficult to comment, whereas I did manage to watch most of the women's stuff.
Cool. Fraser?
Yeah, again, only really seen highlights. He did seem to have a good effect on the games where I saw the highlights from. We definitely had strong involvement. The fact that France made it all the way to the final, I think, also helps when you have a standout player like this. But yeah, so I thought this was justified when they announced him as player of the tournament, and the fact that that also makes him the rising star makes sense with it being like a week ago.
Yeah, get that. Okay. I think that's everyone, isn't it, really?
It is.
We've got one more topic. Is that right, Si?
Yeah, if we want, we can squeeze in Ed Barney's departure from England and GB hockey. So Ed is, or was, I'm not sure if he's left yet, I don't think he's left yet, the performance director for England and GB hockey. He's been there for a long time, been there since 2014.
Yeah.
I think there's mixed reviews. I don't know much about him personally. On the occasions I've dealt with him, he seemed quite nice.
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
Yeah, the criticisms made tended to focus around Tokyo, and rumours that the decision to not field the reserve players rested with him. I don't know if that's true or not. It's what I heard, and not much point in asking. But I also have heard about the support he's given players on the injury side of things, the long-term vision. And also, I imagine he has some parts have played in better integrating the home nations, because if you went back a little while, basically you weren't getting in the GB squad if you didn't play for England. And that's no longer the case with a number of particularly Welsh and Scottish players, Welsh in the men's and Scottish in the women's featuring now. So that won't have happened without him having a strong influence on that side.
Yeah, it's going to be a big loss, to be fair, because he's developed it a lot over the years and stuff. And I don't know who's going to come in now.
Path.
I can do that. Yeah.
Not from Batra's basement, he couldn't.
It probably just basically all fall apart. Fraser, what your thoughts on that?
I don't really think I've got anything to add on what Lam said. I think he's had a big involvement in some improvements to the system. Whether or not the Tokyo stuff did fall on his head, I don't know. I don't think you'd ever get a straight answer out of anyone on that now anyway. Be interesting to see who comes in and how it affects things going forward.
Yeah, definitely. Hopefully they'll get someone on, you know, who's going to be as inspirational or as driven as Ed, maybe. And then things can improve even more. I honestly think we should have a home nations tournament anyway, but maybe we can get that happening at some point as well. I think that's it, isn't it, guys? This was a short one, looks like. If there's nothing else, then maybe we should just call it a day and wish everyone a Merry Christmas, maybe, because it's like a few days before Christmas now. And also hopefully have a really, you know, good New Year's as well, yeah? Have you got anything planned, you guys?
No.
I'm with family and stuff and whatever.
I'm umpiring England under 16 boys versus the UK Armed Forces on Saturday. So that'll be interesting. And then, yeah, try not to get bored out of my mind. I like being busy. And it's hard to keep busy during a long break.
Yeah, true. Fraser, you got any plans?
Many reviews coming out.
Okay.
But then Christmas, just spending time with family.
Cool. Sounds good. Well, pretty much similar, really. spending time with family, probably going around visiting people I haven't seen for ages or whatever. Si, you're quite welcome to come up if you want.
Thank you. I can help you go like full Shawshank Redemption, escaping from a basement.
Don't worry. I'm at home now. Look, can you see the background? I'm at home. It's fine.
I've got a green screen.
Yeah, guys, thank you again for being with me and doing this podcast over the last year. It's going to be obviously many more to come for next year as well. Many more rants from Simon, many more cool and calculated logical talking by me, of course. And then obviously Fraser will basically just come in with a clangor sometimes and totally knock us on our heads.
But don't not point out Tash's mistakes.
I really
accuse him of being in Batra's basement, standard practice at this point.
I really appreciate both of you. Hope you both have a really good Christmas and New Year's. And you know, like I said, if you want to come up, just give me a bell and then we can arrange it. Maybe, I don't know. Yeah, that's it. Thank you to all our listeners as well.
All seven of you.
Oh, there's more than that, you know. Honestly, there is. You just don't. I'll give you the stats later on, but, you know, there's more than that, for sure.
Seven's just in Taff's house.
Yeah. I get all my family to actually listen and subscribe. I've got a big family, you know, extended family. I might actually get them to listen to it as well. It might, you know, improve it by another 1,000 or something.
Did you see your Jake Humphreys thing?
No.
He sends his podcast out to his family WhatsApp group and tells them to, yeah, he shamelessly admitted it.
That's good, though. That's good.
That's where we've been going wrong. We've not been sending it to Jake Humphrey's family WhatsApp group.
We need to get it on there. Oh, honestly, I've got a big extended family, so, you know, it could raise it to about 1 million or something like that, you know. Okay, guys, it's been a pleasure, and hopefully we'll do it again for January. You take care. Hello and welcome to I'll start that again.
Nailed it.
Smashed out a part there.
Okay, stop.